Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for today's camp notes for August 3rd, 2024. Short practice today. Pads were back on. I had a scrimmage simulated effectively, back and forth, some special teams plays mixed in, and I'll try and give you the details I have on that. It's very hot again. One field of 11 on 11 only, so all the focus was on that. So there's a drive followed by a special teams play, a punter field goal attempt, as opposed to multiple QBs getting the same situation to work with. So a little bit different way of running the practice. I know everybody wants to know about the absentees. Keaton Mitchell and TJ Tampa both remain on PUP. Adisa Isaac still have not heard anything about when he's going to be back. Harbaugh said in an interview recently, I think it was yesterday, that he expected him back fairly soon, but you never know what that means with John. Honestly, it's certainly possible that he'll start the year on that NFI list and come back sometime later. In any case, he's missing very valuable time if he's missing preseason games, because this is an opportunity for him to play with live fire, not having to take care of the other guy's quarterback. So it's definitely would have been a big opportunity for him. Trayvon Mullen has a shoulder problem, will be out for at least a couple of weeks. Deontay Hardy is still out. Starting to get a little worried about Deontay Hardy. Harbaugh referred to it as a nagging problem, so we'll see how that goes. Tyler Lindebaum missed his second straight practice. John Harbaugh said he would yesterday, so it did not come as a surprise. Tomorrow is an off day. He'll miss that as well, and hopefully he'll be back on Monday practicing again. And then Tez Walker. We don't have an answer as to why he was out today, but he missed practice, and he's missed a couple recently. He's been the recipient of some rough play by the defense, frankly, in when the play should have been a little less rough in general in these some non-padded practices. But even the padded practices, you need to take care of your own players. So you hope that doesn't happen. So let's see, we had an 11 on colors drill today, and you do most days, but it's always embarrassing. And this happened on the very first 11 versus colors play. The offense goes to the line of scrimmage to run the play, and they can't start the play because they don't know it, and they have to re-huddle. So that's an embarrassment delay, whether you call it a delay of game or a timeout called by the offensive coordinator. Monken didn't seem to be happy about this one, nor should he be. But it happens from time to time. And normally those 11 on 11 plays, the 11 on colors plays, I should say, there's no defense. I mean, it's a bunch of, equipment interns who were brought in to wear a colored shirt and effectively just show the offense a look. And then the offense just basically has to throw the ball as if it's a, receiving drill, not even a one-on-one drill, but a receiving drill, where they go to a spot, catch the ball, and the defense never puts up any resistance on that. The offensive line doesn't have to do anything in terms of actual pass blocking. They have to, try and get their assignment correct, but they don't have to do anything in terms of actual pass blocking because the colored shirt guys make no attempt to go after the quarterback, for example. It's just, it's bad when there's communication issues that hold you back when otherwise you don't really have a defensive unit to play against. We saw a little bit more of the kickoff return drill today. We saw it some before practice, some during the, sorry, I should say before the scrimmage and some during the scrimmage. Wallace appeared to break a nice long one down the left sideline in the warm-up for the scrimmage. There was a nice block on a second such kickoff drill by Charlie Kolar on Mike Reigerman. I didn't pick out a lot otherwise from that. It's definitely very difficult and something that I'll rely on the all 22 to look at during the preseason to see how each of these blocks are working out, whether players are looking backwards or forwards, but an opportunity to talk about something different, certainly this preseason in terms of a big new aspect of the game. I will say Pepe Williams, and this was during the scrimmage, had what appeared to be a good return running straight ahead at the defense and breaking to the right to the sideline. Kind of remind me of a Jacoby Jones return, very linear in nature, meaning straight ahead, then one cut to get the most yardage you could, and that was a good one. The full punt drills were on, and again, we might have had one before the scrimmage, and then we had more during the scrimmage, and Jordan Stout was absolutely rooting the ball today, routinely 55 to 60 yards on his kick. High kicks. You know, it used to be said of Ray Guy that he had stadium high kicks. I mean, these were massive moonshot kicks, long hang time, and certainly what I think they thought they were getting with Stout originally when they drafted him. He's been more in the middle of the league in terms of a lot of his punt factors. So the Ravens have been better at punting than they have been at coverage these last couple of years. But anyway, he was very good today. Wallace was on returns. Again, no Deontay Hardy today. Looked like he had a good first step to avoid coverage. So you like to see that. You like to have a guy who anticipates where they are bearing down on him and immediately takes a step to the opposite side, reestablishes himself, and hopefully can explode out of that. We've seen that. The guy I remember from the 1970s, Virgil Livers, who would almost never take a fair catch. In fact, I think he had 1 year where he had 42 punt returns without a single fair catch for the Chicago Bears. He had that kind of a first step that was kind of one of his trademarks. Didn't have a great long career or anything. And boy, a guy who never takes a fair catch is probably not going to have a great long career in terms of the number of hits he takes. But he had a good first step there in his time with the Bears. Let's see. Wallace then bobbled a punt a little later, and that drew a hoot from the coach that was on that side of the field. And I didn't see who the coach was in the case, but you want a nice clean catch. In fact, what I'm looking for on either punt or kickoff returns is two things. One is really good tracking of the football, that the player gets back to the spot before the ball gets there, is set up to catch. And then the second thing is they need to explode out of that catch. So don't have the catch hold you up with a bobble. Don't have the catch hold you up in other ways. But be able to immediately catch the ball, explode out of your stance, and get upfield. And the guy in recent years who was great at that was Campanero. The Ravens had other, you know, good return men. And in fact, they've had a couple guys who've led the league in returns over that period. But Campanero was really a special one in terms of being able to track the football like that and explode out of that stance. I think they were trying more than anything, probably with these drills, to get a gauge on the gunners and a lot of the one versus two blocking assignments in particular. Who do they have that could beat a two-man jam and still get up the field and put some pressure on that return man to redirect him in a certain way? So we saw a little bit of that. And I didn't really see a gunner who stood out in that regard today. So it is tough to beat a two-man press there, but it is something they obviously look for. And not every team has a Dallas Thomas who can routinely do whatever he wants against such scrimmage jammers. Punt jammers. All right, going to go through the 11-on-11 scrimmage, and I'm just going to give you the notes as they occurred during practice. I think it's easier to get them out quicker this way, and I'll just talk about the plays. I'm not trying to make any broad overarching statements about what happened, other than a couple players I thought clearly played well. But Justin Madubuike had a big day. He and Roquan Smith bottled up Derrick Henry on a run middle on one of the very first plays. Lamar was then forced to scramble, ran for 10 yards, extended his drive. Justice Hill had a nice hard run going right, really stuck his nose in there, limited space, but he kept pushing ahead and trying to make room. And the play was not blown dead, so that's a good thing. Tavius Robinson pushed Roger Rosengarten into Lamar for pressure. Not good. Of course, the anchor is what we're concerned about with Roger Rosengarten. And, you know, to have a middle-of-the-pack pass rusher like Tavius Robinson, even though he's playing better this camp, look good against him is not a good thing for Rosengarten. If I had to handicap this right now, I'd say it's probably less than 50% that Rosengarten starts the season. I still think he'll play. He'll be the regular right tackle at some point during the year. If he is not needed left tackle first, obviously, but it'll be a regular tackle at some point during the year because they really have to figure out what they have. But honestly, I haven't seen enough good from him yet to really say, yeah, he's a guy they should take the chance on right away. And I thought very differently about Orlando Brown in 2018. I thought it was ridiculous that he was being held up in terms of his initial start by James Hurst. You know, and that's exactly what Harbaugh did for, I believe, 7 ball games before they put in Brown. And anyway. I don't think Rosengarten is quite as far along as Orlando Brown was at the same point. One of the big things today, Darian Dalcourt got most of the snaps at center. Now, Linderbaum's out. And the thought obviously might be that Nick Samak would get a lot of those reps. But Dalcourt, if I had to judge, I'd say he's probably past him on the depth chart. I think he's more likely to make the team than Samak. I think Samak will be a top of the practice squad guy. Dalcourt, that's where he may end up. He may be a top of the practice squad guy that they only really carry one center plus another guy who can get them through a game, whether that's Voorhees or McCary or whoever it might be, to just finish out a game for them. But Dalcourt to me would be the first man up for a, you know, several games missed by Linderbaum, where they had to come up with a starter for the next week. I think he's done a little bit more, bigger man than Samak. So, you know, a little more to offer, I think, at the position from what I've seen today, from what I've seen to date. Lamar ended that first series with another scramble. I'm not sure. It looked like it could have been a first down, but that was the end of that series. So Owen Wright looked good on consecutive plays, and this was with Johnson at quarterback. He had a run right. There's kind of an indecisive pull from Ben Cleveland on that play. And then he followed that up with a run to the left side where he found lots of space on the left edge. And I didn't really see how the blocking worked out on that play. It could have been just a lack of aggressiveness to get on that edge and try and make the tackle. Obviously, it doesn't look good if you're a safety or an inside linebacker and you get caught in the wash. It doesn't look good when you lose the edge on that side. But I actually didn't see what happened. All I did see was Owen Wright running to space over there, and it was a good run. He's had a pretty good camp. I think will get a call at some point this year when injuries knock somebody out, and running backs, as we know, miss games. Next drive, we saw Brent Urban. It's actually the same drive. Contained the backside well to tackle Ali for no gain or perhaps a small loss. That was a nice, another good one. Lamar then was back on the field. He completed a 20-yard throw towards the right sideline. It's outside the numbers to Bateman. It was behind Ross and in front of Eddie Jackson. So it looked like a zone place there. It was a nice zone beating kind of a throw. You know, something I'd say about this, about the Jack.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
I'm Jennifer Garner. You may know me from my other job, but I'm a business owner too. Here at Once Upon a Farm, we chose the Capital One Venture X business card because it makes everything we do even more rewarding. With no preset spending limit, our purchasing power adapts to meet our business needs. And unlimited double miles on every purchase means we earn more too. And when we travel, we get access to over 1,300 airport lounges. The Capital One Venture X business card. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/VentureXBusiness.
The Jackson Bateman connection. I don't think this play is the kind of play that shows it. I think the kind of play that shows it is a timed up route break. Ball's immediately there. It's in the air before Bateman turns. That's how you determine that Bateman and Lamar have a connection. I think on this day, I think we saw, you know, Lamar was probably looking for Bateman, but it wasn't like a lot of timed up throws. And that is a legitimate concern for the Ravens this year, is do they really take advantage of what Bateman has to offer in terms of route running, which will require Lamar to make more on schedule throws, more throws you know, that are there as Bateman is turning for the football, more of what we used to see with Flacco and Derek Mason on the back shoulder on the outside. I haven't really seen that yet between the two of them. And there were times, you know, we saw it in 23, but overall Bateman did not have a good year. And I don't think Lamar took advantage of either his, what he could do deep, you know, how he could contest for the football by leaping high and also really how he timed up throws for shorter yardage. You know, a lot of these 8 and 10 yard throws that you can get pretty easily with a top route runner like Bateman, who's at that X position. All right. So let's see, what else do we have? Derrick Henry ran left to space. This is a play where Ardarius Washington kind of shows up some of the things about tackling that are potential shortcomings for him. He took kind of a bad angle to the tackle, and then Henry made him look kind of small in terms of, obviously shouldering off what would have been a tackle, what could have been a tackle. I think one of the things I saw from Ardarius on the play is he might have underestimated Henry's speed, and I like that a lot from Henry's perspective. And opponents can underestimate Henry's speed at their own peril this year. So Henry does a lot of things well. He's a good blocker, but he has some legitimate speed and he can get to the outside. And if you take the wrong angle to the player, particularly if you cut it too short on a player like Derrick Henry, you miss him and your chance of recovery is low and he may get a big gain off you. And the second is if you try and reverse back at a 45 degree angle, like an angle that you'll take a safety C typically to stop a long run from going all the way. That's when Henry just runs you over because you have the angle to try and push him out of bounds and whatnot, but he has a very big body and a great stiff arm. So be fun to see what Derrick Henry does for the Ravens. He does look physically, he looks in fine shape. I'm looking to see what happens, not in the preseason because I don't think he'll really play at all, but I'm really looking to see the mesh point in play when week one comes and how much can Lamar leverage the fact that how much can they leverage each other in terms of their own running and in terms of the play action opportunities it creates by having Henry in the mesh point. We really have not seen that yet from Derek and Lamar, so hopefully we will. All right, Lamar scrambled from David Ajabo's pressure, came up short, just short of a touchdown. This is to end the drive, but Lamar on the very next throw threw a TD on a rollout. So at the far end of the field, it looked to me like Aguilar was the recipient, but it might have been Bateman. I'm honestly not sure. At that point, the scoreboard was 12-0. It was a short throw anyway. It's just not the kind of throw that, wow, this guy, huge connection or this or that. It's just a nice easy throw, and that put the offense up at that point in practice, 12-0 on the scoreboard. It's not a football score. That's a practice score where they have a special point scoring system for the offense and the defense, and it was 12-0 at that point. Then Johnson came back on the field, and some things started to go wrong for the offense again. Madubuike bowled Saleh for a pressure to start the next series. Then Chris Collier, by the way, who has not done a lot of note this camp so far, ran left. Looked like there was a very small crease. He exploited it, burst through for a gain of 10. Kind of reminded me a little bit of some of the runs that Ray Rice had during that 2009 wildcard game at New England, where he's running through some very small creases and made big plays out of that. Now, not the 83-yard touchdown. That was, he had plenty of room to run through that. But on some of the other ones, he had smaller creases to work with and still made good yardage out of them. So, it's certainly a good thing to see out of any running back. Collier, by the way, practice squad candidate, possibly, certainly maybe cut. He's a small school guy who has extraordinary stats. I don't even remember the school he went to, but it's extraordinary stats at a small school is what he had. That series with Johnson ended with consecutive passes defense at the line of scrimmage. The first appeared to be Travis Jones, and I got to be honest, I didn't actually see who tipped the ball. I usually can be most sure by the reaction. Who's the player who's really celebrating? No one was celebrating on this play. Travis Jones has a serious swagger this year. And, you know, we had him at the podium yesterday It's a I've been here before kind of swagger. We've seen it from Adafe Owe as well. And there's certain players who it's a big part of their game, and it's what they like to do is they celebrate and they enjoy it after a big play. And I've certainly seen Brent Urban on the majority of times he's had a pass defense, even in his career, but certainly in camp, is celebrating. And there's plenty of other people who celebrate as well. Justin Matabike had a mild celebration on the next play. But I'm impressed with Travis Jones and not only his play on the field, where he's an absolute behemoth inside that is going to be very hard to handle. He's one of the guys to look for in this first preseason game, particularly if the Eagles don't keep their first string offensive line in against him. So we don't know exactly who he'll face. And if he faces some second team offensive linemen, he should make them look very silly. He was by far the Ravens' best player in the first preseason game last year. Now he's a little bit more of a protected player. So he won't spend a lot of time out there on the field. We'll see him for a series or two. And I don't think we'll see him really all that much all of preseason after that. So I expect, the next time we see him in anger will be on opening day. And hopefully he'll give the Chiefs interior lineman and Creed Humphrey and whatnot some real trouble then. All right, so we're talking about the passes defense and some of the celebration afterwards. So Johnson was back in the next 11-on-11 segment. That included a big yak play to Dayton wide. Wide open, 10 yards outside the numbers. It's kind of play. There had to be some sort of missed assignment on the play. It's still a nice yak play, nice identification of an open man or a mistake made by the defense. And he made the most of it. A guy whose name I have not said a lot so far this camp is Joe Evans. He beat tight end Scotty Washington outside for a pressure that forced a check down from Johnson. Nice to see him get in on the quarterback and have an impact there. I don't honestly see a place on the team for him at this point. Could be a practice squad guy that they like and they want to keep around, but also he's going to get a lot of play in these preseason games. He is not there to be protected. He's a guy who they want to see what he's got, give him a chance to get some opportunity on film, obviously make sure he doesn't get injured. But as an edge player, I think they're going to want to let him run wild. And the Ravens have had some remarkable second half players, some who ended up on the team and others who didn't, in terms of production. And the guy who was the most outstanding preseason player of all time is probably Nate Bowling. If you look back, just a remarkable amount of time. But you can also look at a player like Dwayne Missouri and his legendary battle against Kelly Gregg in the 2001 Hard Knocks series and the 2001 roster choice that came down to the very last preseason game, a day game against the Giants, when they both had immense games. Dwayne Missouri had two sacks and he had a forced fumble on both of them. Kelly Gregg had a sack, an interception, which was incredible. It's the only interception of Kelly Gregg's career. And then he had the second forced fumble of Missouri's he scooped and scored on. So incredible back and forth battle between there. Dwayne Missouri went on to be a great player in the Arena League. Played only a couple games, I think, with the Dallas Cowboys in that 2001 season. Kelly Gregg, of course, went on to a long career with the Ravens. So the Ravens, I think, made the right choice, but it was a great preseason competition and probably the best one in Ravens history, I would say. So after Evans, let's see. The series ended with Chris Board in coverage of tight end Scotty Washington. The ball was overthrown, incomplete. Nice coverage by Board underneath. Then Lamar overthrew Kolar 25 yards down the right sideline. That starts another drive here. On the next play, Lamar hit Andrews 10 yards between the numbers in the right hash. Threaded that between Simpson and Van Noy. Nice to see that happen. Of course, anytime where you can take advantage of that. Those guys, combined to make the tackle, but it was still a well thrown ball for a decent gain. And then the last notes I have are from Malik Harrison, who made a fine pair of run stops. The first one, he stood up Henry on a run middle, so he obviously is playing disciplined gap football there, and that's something we expect from Harrison, regardless of where he's playing position-wise, whether he's playing inside or outside. The second one looked like he was an outside linebacker on the play, held the offensive left side well, shed his block, and then tackled Henry for a loss on the play. So Malik Harrison, pretty important player for the Ravens this year, certainly in terms of what he does on special teams. He was a base defense Sam linebacker last year with the loss of Malik Cam. It's even more important that Harrison is available to the Ravens and takes some of those early down Sam snaps that would on later downs go to more of a pass rush threat like Van Noy. And then he's also played some inside linebacker as a backup in this camp, and look forward to seeing. I don't look forward to seeing him during the regular season. But if anything were to happen to Roquan Smith, he's really the only choice they would have, I believe, internally to step into that spot. The only other guy they have is the right size is a Vandy Rigby, and he's missed a lot of practices already with illness. So, or I'm sorry, he's missed a lot of practices. I don't know the reason. Finally is back on the field now for about the last 3 to 4 days. But he's, I think, very far behind. He is an interesting guy to watch in the second half of these preseason games to see how does his recognition look? How is he looking in terms of being in the right space gap-wise? Is he taking too many read steps? Is play action beating him? Is he doing a good job dropping? Or is drops fairly deep such that he's protecting that level two, level three area? So anyway, I've got a lot to look forward to from a Vandy Rigby, and he's a Temple guy, I believe, from this year's draft, who's a UDFA. But still not a great chance to make the team, but could be a top of the practice squad guy still, I believe, in terms of having some inside linebacker depth if anything were to happen, in particular to Roquan Smith. Well, that's going to do it for Camp Notes today. Appreciate you listening in. We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.